leadership competencies, developing a leadership programme and a new personal review process as well. Also actions around reviewing and increasing the council's approach to agile and smart working, which you mentioned the coronavirus earlier, that might be a key driver for this particular action, supporting staff health and wellbeing within the workplace as well. So there is the workplace wellbeing survey, which was undertaken at late last year, and utilising the results of this to create a programme of works moving forward. We have a section on financial stability, so maintaining a balanced budget for the financial year. Somebody mentioned earlier about the review of the leisure centre contracts and considering any issues arising and any approval required regarding that. With regards to commercialism, so we've got things about a commercial and enterprise strategy, reviewing the council's land and building assets, revisiting a business case for building commercial residential property for sale or rent, developing a treasury management strategy, and completing a feasibility study of the capital plan asset strategy. Enhancing and continuing to develop the trade waste expansion project, so increasing the number of commercial waste customers against current baseline. And then under the Wong Charm section, we have supporting the boundary review of the Local Government Boundary Commission, so that's something we're going to be supporting them with over the next 12 months. Development of a new communication strategy, and you mentioned earlier about, I think Rob mentioned the resilience partnership, so some of the things that were mentioned under resilience, such as coronavirus and things, are going to be developed under working with the resilience partnership. That's the end of that section.
Yeah. I've just got one question. Just on the trade waste, do we think that the fact that we're only offering trade waste and not recycling, that that's putting an awful lot of businesses off, the fact that we're not offering dual service? I think most commercial operations would offer both. I think that that would be a reason why people might not take that up.
So I think that part of the issue that we need to consider in terms of scaling up trade waste is our ability to offer that type of service, the frequency of the service, and obviously that relates to the amount of capacity we have within the current contract. So we'll feed that back to Matt Bradford, his head of service, and we can get some more details, but I know it's a known issue that he is grappling with.
Councillor Parsons.
Can I just ask on the Treasury item, is the Treasury Management, is this just words and titles, but the Treasury Management Strategy, that's the statutory document that we have to produce every year now? Or is that the new combined capital strategy? I always get the wrong way around.
I throw that one over my shoulder, I think, Chair.
What's the new one?
So we are required to do a capital strategy, yeah, which should contain the Treasury Management Strategy. So Treasury Management Strategy has always been, not always, but that historically that has been a statutory document according to this code of practice, and the capital strategy is a new requirement which sort of subsumes the Treasury Management Strategy within it. So the short answer is they're both required.
I feel that particular item, again, please don't think I'm trying to be rude, I feel like it's a non-item for a delivery plan. It's what we do anyway by rote. We have to do it. The final strategy is agreed and published. Yes, we have to do that. We're going to develop a strategy with regard to our attorney. It seems like just a rote action rather than something amongst the delivery plan, if that makes sense to you. And I'm not sure it lives in this document in that way, because how am I going to measure it? We did what we have to do because we have to do it. It doesn't feel like it's part of the plan to me to have that in there. It doesn't seem to fit in the context of this particular document.
I have no particular strong desire to see it retained in there. Simon, what do you have a view as to whether it needs to be retained in there?
No, I think to be honest, a lot of this is about presenting a suitable balance within the document around services and demonstrating responsibility and important actions. Certainly relaxed about its inclusion or otherwise.
Anyone else got any views on that? No.
Okay, well, quite happy to remove that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Okay.
It's going to happen anyway.
It's going to be looked at
by budget, it's going to be looked at by audit committee, it's going to be thoroughly engaged in.
Anything else?
Okay, so I'm not going to go through all the indicators individually, but just to highlight that, as requested by Cabinet previously, we have created two different sections, one for direct indicators and one that the Council indirectly impacts as well, just to create that difference. There are a number of existing indicators in there, which we've had previously, but there are also some new ones as well. So we've got, say, like KI18 about CO2, reduction of CO2, and KI19 about percentage of air quality monitoring. They're new ones. Whereas some of them are existing ones that we've done year on year for trend analysis. So it's just if there's any questions on those.
Yep, Councillor Parsons.
I have two. First on K4A, K14A and K14B. Why do we feel the need to put a stretch target in this document for that one particular item?
Recycling.
K14A and K14B.
The view there has been that the national target of 50% is something that the council has set year on year on year on year and not been able to deliver. So the view has been that it's a rather false target, and that unless we change substantially the way in which we collect by investing in something like food waste, we aren't ever going to reach that. But it is the target set by government for...
So we're showing our target, really.
So we are showing our target, but notionally still not dismissing the government's aspirational target of 50%.
Okay. On page 38, on K1, 13, 14 and 15, why, when the measurement of determination is significantly small, 8 weeks, 13 weeks, are we unable to produce quarterly statistics on that?
We need to go back on that.
We've put it as an annual target because it came, I can't remember which committee it came from, but it was asked for as an annual target from a particular committee, which is why we've included those three in here. However, I can confirm that on a quarterly basis we do report on it anyway, so I give 3% at every quarter with regards to those, so there's no reason why it couldn't be a quarterly target.
It seems unusual for something that's got that smaller time frame that it doesn't come back reported against. I can understand why perhaps in the first quarter, because there's a 13-week time lag to the second quarter, but I struggle with an 8-week turnaround that we can't report targets
in. Genuinely is down to, I think, what was asked at the particular committee at the time, but we do report on it quarterly, so I see no reason why we couldn't.
Just check on what the committee was, in case there's a some sort of resolution that we just need to
understand it. But it would be interesting to know why
the information's clearly there.
Okay, then I'm just picking up on KO4B that Councillor Parsons has already mentioned. I understand obviously the 50% is the national target, and our current rate is at 44%, which is, I'm guessing, why it's just been put in for every quarter is 44%. But again, a bit disappointed to see that we're not trying to stretch that. 50% is where we need to be, and understandably we're quite a way off it, but there are things that are being done and things that need to be done to get that closer to the 50%, and to say actually we're quite happy with 44, because that's sort of what that says to me.
I guess that's, so there's interpretation there, isn't it? I think 44% is the minimum level that we're happy with, so that's our sort of baseline target, and our stretch target is 50, and we want to obviously close from 44 to 50. But again, without something significantly changing, either behaviours or collection or the packaging, etc., it's difficult to change that 44% figure by any significant magnitude. We could perhaps have a further conversation with the head of service and portfolio holder and others to see if there's anything to do to try and move that forward. But the way it's been set at the moment is a sort of 44% is where our sort of standard figure is, and if it deviates below that, then we know we've got an issue that we need to address. And anything that we can do to get closer to the 50 is a positive. I think sometimes some of these sort of set targets, it's you need to actually look at the graph and the performance data and see what's happening and trend lines, rather than just what's there in terms of the flat percentages. So we can have a conversation with Matt and the portfolio holder, but I'm not sure.
Councillor Harper Davis.
Yes, I know. I'm just trying to look at the detail. That was all.
Thank you, through chair. I know there's a panel
really
looking at the recycling rate at the moment. And I think Matt particularly, I spoke to Matt today about something else, we were talking about the potential new targets. And I think, as Rob has mentioned, you know, it is the government aspirational target 50%. Unless the it could well change because the environmental bill, so it could well change with the impact of that, because that's not only going to impact on us, you know, potentially food waste collections. We have to see how that will pan out. But it also impacts on wholesalers and the distribution companies which supply the materials. So it could well impact on a positive note, but we just have to wait and see. And I know we're looking forward to the panel, any panel suggestions as well.
Thank you.
Any
other questions on those? No? Yep. That's lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
okay, so if we can move on to 7B, so we've got approach to commercialisation.
I'll stay here, but I'll grab a water if that's okay.
Yeah, of course.
Chair, can I just respond to Cathy Bailey's question or query about the West regarding the Roche Centre? Is it, just for clarity, did you wonder how Quest works or how we try to gain the Quest?
A bit of both, really, as to what incentivizes or either carrot or stick is there for that
it's a mix of both
for the contractor to get to that standard.
Well, actually, there's so many KPIs within the contract, which is the same with all of our contracts.
Yeah.
And regarding Quest, that really works on mystery shopping and feedback from the participants of the leisure centres. So it's a mix of things. I know, you know, there's a quality assurance around cleanliness. You know, you have issues with cleanliness and whatever aspect of the leisure centres there is any issues. But there is so many KPIs. I think from a point of view, from a procurement perspective, when we're looking at our major contracts, is that they're so tightly written and there's repercussions if they don't achieve what they need to achieve. So I think as a, you know, so as committee regarding leisure centres, you know, you should have assurance that, you know, whatever there is an issue, then it's always addressed. But CRAS particularly in all three of our leisure centres now, which is really good. It's a very stringent process.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, can you have us kick off?
Absolutely. So, do you want to introduce it, Simon? Oh, how was that?
You're having a bit of a break.
Sorry, sip the water for a minute.
I think you need a bit of a rest by
Yeah.
So, just the first thing to say, I'll just do a very, very brief overview. So, just the first thing to say on this, I think I have participated to some extent, and we are very aware of the commercialisation scrutiny panel that's due to report very soon. I think that will come to, I think the outcomes and the recommendations of that will come to Cabinet in April. So I think I've had a look at the nascent recommendations. I've not seen the final version, but I think I'm hopeful there's quite a good correlation between what the panel's thinking and what a lot of these reflected in here. I think there could be some more detail, so obviously we'll do a more detailed response in April, so I think we can look forward to that. Just in terms of this report, which we were keen, I think, to get to Cabinet this time round, there's sort of a number of things. So maybe just in very sort of quick overview, the first bit of this really is around context. So page 47 just talks about the financial landscape. There's sort of numbers that sort of correlate or reflected in here from the MTFS, and the sort of main number really is that in 2023 we're likely to have a funding gap, so income falling short of expenditure by about 3 million. So really that's a very major driver for a lot of what we're talking about in this paper, and the reason for focusing more on commercialisation than maybe we have done previously. Page 47 and 48 talks about really about which commercial activities we would want to focus on, and sets out some criteria. So I think probably the main two, although a number of others are important, are around the scale of what returns are achievable and also the pace in which we can achieve those. and that pay sort of sets out those sort of criteria. There are other things around sort of skills and capacity and, to be honest, what our views are and how deliverable some of the ideas are, but that sort of sets out the criteria. And then page 49 sort of does conclude that commercial property being sort of tried and tested is an area we would want to focus on, having sort of tested commercial property as a concept and a proposition against the criteria that we set out there. So that's that element of the document. One of the big things around commercialisation and making sure we get it right is around skills and capacity, making sure we have those available in the council to us. And that, so there is a section that talks about the recruitment of a new director, so the director of commercial development, if I think I remember the job title correctly. So that's in there, and it sort of that explains why we want to go down that particular route and why we want to invest in the post. And add to our capacity. And then finally, there's quite a longish section on commercial property covering its evaluation, and then going on to Appendix A, so hopefully members can see quite a lot of the detail there and some of the factors we take into account in evaluating the property. And then from Appendix B, Appendix B talks about the process, so sort of the governance and how the process would actually work, and including some sort of reporting and transparency and what members get to see. So there's those sort of key elements, I think, for me in the document. And if there's any, obviously happy to take any questions between me and the Chief Executive as we go forward.
I'll just start off briefly. From my perspective, I've asked a lot of questions on this already. So obviously as a council, it's something that's really new for us. Anything on the commercial side is always more risk involved. And a lot of my questions were how we were going to sort of mitigate that risk and make sure that we're kind of thorough and put all of our checks in place to make sure that this is successful. I've asked a lot of questions already outside of this meeting. There's further information in the document, and from my perspective, it actually gives me a lot of confidence that this has been really thought through and that there are a lot of checks in place. So I'm really pleased with the information that's in the report. Councillor Draycott?
Yes, Chair. Similar start. I thought it was a very understandable document, very informative, and answered a lot of questions that I had. So two things I just want to raise. Now that we've got to this stage, finally, and it's all kind of starting to roll, we have the government carrying out a review of councils who have started commercialisation. And I don't know whether they're going to start looking at taxing councils or what have you, but they obviously see there's an income stream there. So I'm hoping you've taken that on board. Obviously, we've got to wait and see what's going to happen. But the second is about current services that the council delivers. This is going to take priority. Things will happen quite quickly. And certain staff with skills and responsibilities will have to concentrate solely on this. So like legal services or what have you, the normal day-to-day bread and butter issues, I'm worried, can kind of get put back on the shelf for a while. And how do we manage both? Because to me, they're equally important.
So, well, I think the first thing is skills and capacity. So I think it's recognised that we do need additional skills and capacity, hence the recruitment of this additional post. As we move forward, we may consider adding more skills capacity to our organisation. I think the caveat or the main criteria must be that they would pay for themselves with the income. So as long as there's sort of a business case for doing that, I don't think that's a problem. In the short term, I think you're absolutely right about legal services, and there are other areas where we would need professional input and professional advice. What we are able to do in those areas is outsource or appoint external legal professionals. So that does take a certain amount of time from the in-house team, but that's how we would look to manage this in the short term. So maybe that's slightly more expensive, but it's also got the advantage of flexibility. So I think we certainly wouldn't want this activity to take anything away from core service delivery, and I think all the teams would understand that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, James, would you like me to answer the bit about taxing councils?
Do you know any more about that?
I don't think councils will get taxed. It is certainly the case that there's been quite a lot of interest in this area. There was a National Audit Office report on this. So I think there are some horror stories out there. So there are councils that have bought things that they are probably regretting at this point in time. There is also an issue of proportionality, which I think the government has particularly looked at. So the scale of the investment and the reliance on returns is a proportion of the council as a whole, and there are one or two councils who borrowed enormous quantities of money, sort of many multiples of the value of their net budget, so they have in effect become property companies with a little bit of a council attached, which is a concern. The government has looked at the borrowing and the way councils operate, so it's not a tax. They have actually looked at, I believe they've looked at being more prescriptive in the rules, but what they've concluded is that the sort of flexibility, or certainly at the moment they've concluded the flexibility about borrowing and finance and the legal powers are okay-ish at the moment. What they have done is increase the lending rate or borrowing rate from the Public Works Loan Board, so that actually puts a sort of an additional hurdle in terms of the business case and makes the business case that a little bit more challenging. But as far as I'm aware, or certainly the sort of the information coming out of central government, is that they are going to let us carry on. I think they will be having a closer look at us going forward. I think some councils will get a lot of focus and attention on them, but certainly in terms of what we envisage at a scale which will hopefully make a difference, but it will be well below some of the investment and some of the activity that other councils are carrying out.
That's helpful, thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hadji Nicola.
Thank you very much for your explanation. Now, I'm glad you mentioned a horror story, because I will mention another horror story, which is called the NHS. In the NHS, for the last 25 years, we kept appointing managers and managers and managers in order actually to reduce the deficit. The end result is actually the deficit has become bigger and bigger and bigger, and all these managers are there in permanent positions contributing to the deficit. Now, so I have three questions. Question number one, is it a permanent job? Second is, how do you measure the success? And when you're going to measure the success, and which are the actions if it's not successful?
Okay, so yes, it is a permanent job. Actually, it's interesting, the conversation, one of the challenges in the public sector is actually what does good look like and how do you measure it. So that's particularly challenging in the private sector and commercial activities. There's a much greater level of purity. So is it successful or not? Will it generate any money or not? And is it essentially profitable or generate a surplus, as a sort of term I should use? So that's the clear criteria for success. In this report, we are talking about financing the new post for a period of 1 year. If that's not working out and the arrangement's not proving successful, and clearly we think it will be successful, maybe predicated by getting the correct person involved, but if it's not successful, then we would look at the structure and potentially consider eliminating that post or doing something differently if that was required. So we obviously need to let the new service and the new activity bed in, but it's certainly not something we could allow to continue on a significant basis if it clearly wasn't working.
I concur with that.
Councillor Bailey.
Thank you. I agree with all the checks and balances in place moving forward with regards to how investments are made, etc. Where are the costs borne for that? As in, where do they come out? Do they come out of the existing budget or do they come out of this investment budget?
The costs would be usually attributed to a purchase, so things like the legal fees and the stamp duty. So in terms of if a property costs £1 million, then there's sort of fees and stamp duty on top of that. So the total cost in terms of our accounts would be £1,050,000,
okay.
And that would be the number against which we would sort of calculate the
and
sort
are
of
we,
returns.
Sorry, if, I'm, if I may carry on. Are we cap? So if we're going to outside advisors, for example,
yeah.
Are we capping their fees? Are we saying once we get to this, as in a percentage of? So if for example we're buying a property at £1 million,
yeah,
it's capped at a certain amount. If we're buying a property at £5 million, it's capped at. So I the cost of this due diligence isn't going to get silly because we know what contracts are like. They'll just keep chucking the bills in, and you know I'm conscious that the money needs to be spent on the investment, not necessarily on the due diligence. I'm not saying we don't need the due diligence. I fully agree with what we're doing, but there's a balance to be made, isn't there, between what it costs us to do that due diligence and the time frame that then takes versus.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So I understand the point entirely. So the way that it would work is that we would the new corporate director will be working with an agent within the market. That agent will have a fixed fee, 1%, 1.5%, and the value of that would be capped. Then we would commission, perhaps in the case we were just talking about legal advice, that would be on a fee, so it will cost us £15,000 for that conveyance or that due diligence. And surveyors, perhaps again on a fee which will be known and agreed ahead. All of that will be put into a report alongside the responses from the due diligence, and the value of the purchase versus the return would be assessed in terms of its percentage return. We either take the decision to continue or not. So we'd have a look at it before we start, and then as we go through in terms of its return on value. So it should all be within the cost envelope.
So in terms of if we went to, for example, outside solicitors rather than in-house for whatever reason, we're not going out to a full tender process. I presume we have panel solicitors that we've got three solicitors we can use. Which one's got capacity at whatever time and which one's got the right skill set, for example. I presume we have a panel system in that respect, like you would do in the commercial world.
Yeah, so through you, Chair, that's correct. We use EM LawShare, I think it is currently, as one of those panels where there's various prices already pre-tendered for, and we can call off on that procurement exercise, which has been done prior to, well, been ongoing, I think, one of those types of rolling procurement processes that keeps people on a panel that we can draw off. So exactly as you describe.
Lovely, thank you.
Councillor Parsons?
I just seek one point of clarification before asking two sort of questions. The first £10 million that we passed to invest, is it 5 and 5 or is it all 10 in the first year? Could you just remind me?
It's five million in this financial year and five million next financial year.
That's all right. I just want to I want to go down two routes. One, I want to do a quick bit of frag packet maths for people just to get a sense of where we are. So we've got £5 million that we gave permission for from the £10 million that we passed. That's going in this year. And the £15 million that's still got to arrive at council, we're putting another £5 million in this year. So that's £10 million this year. So if you just say 5% return on that £500,000 interest, take off the 100,000 salary, take off the opportunity cost of losing the money out of Treasury, which is gaining interest, take off the 1.5% fees, add on the percentage for MRP. If I roll through all of that, we do need some quite serious return on our investment. And I note that in the report we're talking about in a hurry as we develop this. So on that basis, I just worry about the scale. I don't know, and we'll see when the commercial panel reports. It might be one of the things I believe might come out of the commercial panel about the scale of investments and about whether it's enough or not in the current climate to bridge this kind of gap. And that fact packet analysis is not far off the mark, really, and the scale of challenge facing us. And I know that we've got a real opportunity on Wednesday night in Audit Committee to really have a look at the Treasury strategy, the capital or that piece. So I'm intrigued to look at that and that whole scale. So I know in looking at that whole piece in the round, I wonder whether we're in the right space quite yet. I know we've got £5 million additional in year two. which will be balanced by the other 5 million we've already passed, so that's another 10, and then 5 again in year 3 on the model. So that starts to become serious by year 3. But I just wonder about the speed we can develop and deliver all of that against the current interest rates and the cost, the opportunity cost of doing, etc., etc. So we are going to have a good question, I'm sure, on all the committee on Wednesday night around all of that. And the two sort of points really that I bring to light. We passed the constitution change, which meant that this stuff's not going to get scrutinised. We're not going to get the opportunity to call in scrutiny. We're going to have a 12-month arrangement, at which the renewal of that 12-month arrangement between chair of this commission and the leader is not clearly defined about the renegotiation of that every year in the report. It's not clearly defined at all. It just says, and the agreement will be renewed on an annual basis. It doesn't say how and where that might go and what the journey of that renewal of that decision is going to look like. Certainly not in the constitution change that was passed. It just says it will be renewed every year. So that obviously concerns me. The timetable by which the reports were going to be produced, this is the first time I've seen this tonight, I don't think this was available when council made the decision about that. And I'm wondering why, at the point where we have on page 60, the appraised property against matrix and white briefing note, why that briefing note can't be available to scrutiny. Because I cannot see any justification for taking this whole operation outside the realm of scrutiny for 12 months at a time. I don't find that appropriate in the public sector for us. And I don't understand why. I don't know any property deal that needs the speed that we can't scrutinise in a 12-month period. I'm very uncomfortable on behalf of the public that we've passed, the council, everybody passed except for me that abstained, and my own group are trying to beat me up about that currently. We're going to have some fun with that one. But I don't understand why this sort of process is completely taken out of the hands on an annual basis of scrutiny to be able to really tackle it properly, call in, etc. When we have a timetable here that I think we could see a briefing report the same as Cabinet could, or the same as the leader could, and be able to just give a view, because I think that would be in the public interest for us.
So just in terms of the latter point, the process I think by which we'll need to deliver some of these assessments and responses, if we're acting within the market, could be relatively short, and therefore the decision was made based on our experiences and our assessment, and also our knowledge of what is done in other local authorities to take it down the direction that was agreed at council. I think there is plenty of opportunity for scrutiny to look at the purchases post-purchase, and also audit committee in terms of looking at the portfolio, which again is common practice elsewhere. So I think there's lots of opportunity for people to consider the choices that have been made and to feed into those. We are confident that the process that we've set out provides plenty of checks and balances, and the purpose of again sort of airing those tonight give us the opportunity to ensure that scrutiny are happy that we have got the correct checks and balances in place prior to implementing the purchases. We'll be relying specifically on a lot of external expertise and support, which again I think further mitigates the risk associated with it. So all in all, I think we've got a reasonable amount of scrutiny proportionate to the amount of time that we have available in terms of which to implement probably quite time-limited opportunities, some of which may be on market, some of which may be off market, and hence the need for speed, which is outlined in the processes we've set up in this paper.
But the point behind that is it's after the event. The very key phrase in that is it's after the decision is made. So the ability for me to scrutinise and change, I probably don't find any value in scrutinising that decision once it's made, done, completed, done and dusted, because we're not going to change it. It's done. It's a property investment, so it's not something you switch off 2 weeks later because a scrutiny group says, blimey, we didn't like the look of that one. So I'm very uncomfortable in the public domain to step away from this issue on the basis that I was uncomfortable with the constitutional change and voted to abstain on that particular issue. I'm uncomfortable that the definition of the process at the end of the 12-month period for that renegotiation of that 12-month blanket pass is not clearly defined in the paper. And I'm uncomfortable from the public's perspective that I'm only going to get to see this after the decision, done and dusted. It's made, we bought it, there you go. That doesn't seem to me like good public sector scrutiny. That doesn't seem to me like I'm doing my job.
I could only reiterate some of my previous points, to be honest, but the we can certainly look at the process for renegotiating and re-agreeing the scrutiny position in terms of the exemption. I don't know, Adrian, if there's anything that's constitutional with regards to that, but I assume it will need to be reconfirmed with the chair, and we can ensure that it comes here for discussion if that's helpful prior to doing that. On your point about you wouldn't see much value in scrutinising after the fact, I think there would be value in that. I think it would provide the opportunity to give some views on the level of risk that was being taken and start to affect the way in which we might look at future purchases. So I don't see there's an issue potentially in that. I also think one of the things that scrutiny and the audit committee will do very usefully is look at the portfolio and the balance of portfolio risks in terms of the types of property being purchased and the way in which they were being managed, which I think going forward will be an ongoing issue that will need to be cited on as accounts, and it will be useful to have members' input into that. But both my sort of experience directly and from the knowledge from other councils, including those that presented to the commercialisation panel, I think it is a necessary requirement that we are able to act quickly and speedily in order to make some of these purchases happen in the commercial world. They will not wait for a scrutiny meeting to be called, held, feedback, and that to then adjust it. The view is that it will be delegated as an executive approach in terms of decision making.
Councillor Bolton.
Yeah, just a couple of points. There are three of us on the Scrutiny Commission who also sit on the Audit Committee, so I therefore see little value at all in having two committees where 50% of the members are common in doing a post-purchase scrutiny. I was also considering that we're talking about big sums of money here. We're not talking about 10,000, 50,000, we're talking about 1 million, 5 million, whatever the figure may be. And I see, you know, Scrutiny Commission, as you know, meets every month. It's not as if we meet every 3 months or every 4 months, we meet every month. And I see no reason why we couldn't be asked to pre-scrutinise things.
It's just not the time scale, would. Commercial property.
That's the same point I was making earlier.
Well,
really,
it
which
is
that
I'm really supporting council.
And I accept the views and I understand them, and I'm not saying they aren't without merit. I'm just saying that the way in which we've established it is to enable us to be able to take relatively quick decisions in a commercial market where the time frames are not likely to coincide with the scrutiny timetable, and that we'll need to mobilise quite quickly and potentially with, you know, a period of a matter of weeks to complete a deal, which will require us to act swiftly and not to rely on extra meetings being called or to wait for views from committee members.
Councillor Jacob, yes, we are going to have to wrap this up in a minute. I'm just conscious of time.
We'll be quick. Yeah. I mean, this was mentioned at the council meeting and I fully accepted at the time. There could well be a situation where it does coincide with the meeting, right? And maybe a quick verbal report could be possible, right? But I actually think that won't be very practical. I think things will move very quickly. Decisions will have to be taken. I still think, though, there's a possibility of an email or something to the chair of the scrutiny committee so that they can report back to the next meeting verbally. I think that should still be a reality in this world of IT and what have you. If it can be done, that's the only option I think is feasible. Otherwise, I fully accept that things have to be done, got on with, and the deal done, and then we deal with it afterwards. And I don't see a problem with scrutinising after events, because as has been said, there's a role for us there so that we learn good practice the next time. Thank you, Chair.
I think it's the issue. We are in a benign environment, and so we assume two good people sit down and do things in the best interest, and I'm very comfortable with that. But I'm also equally comfortable from everything I've seen in my experiences in statutory life in this country, in governments abroad and in politics, that the world of benign democracy is not as safe and sacrosanct as we all think.
The world
of scrutiny, looking at things, having other people look at things, is extraordinarily good for all parties.
It's been agreed.
It benefits and is a strength to these things. It's not a weakness to delay something and a decision by 24 hours. And I've been involved in property deals. I have properties around the country. And I'm not aware of anything where I've sat there and thought 24 hours and the chance for five people to comment on it is going to blow the deal. And I think it's safe. We're in a benign environment. But we might not be at one point 5 years.
I accept that. But I bet you didn't have five people doing those property deals with you that you brought in to comment on it. I bet you did it in a very business focused way. You did not expose those deals to a scrutiny panel to be considered, and you made a decision based on the policies and the procedures that you had in place. I'm comfortable that what we're doing gives a reasonable balance between commercial expediency and decision making with the ability for members to see transparently up front what we're doing, how we're going to do it, and then to query the outcomes after those purchases have been made, and as they start to develop, to start to affect the way in which we might implement it going forward. It is new for the council, and we will need to obviously make sure that we are transparent and clear about how we're doing it, both here and in other forums as required. But on balance, given where we are, I think we've got a good proportionate approach there.
Thank you. We'll just take one last question from Councillor Baines.
Which is a three-parted one question. I'm reasonably comfortable, actually, with the criteria that's been developed on page 48, 49. I do think we should be evaluating what's been done, when it's been done, against those items in due course. But I'm reasonably comfortable that council officers have to be given a degree of leeway in order to make the deals. That said, I think there may be a limit. A limit perhaps should be set for a certain amount. Now, I know that's not for this meeting, that's probably for full council to consider at some point or another, but how much leeway should be given? Is it 5 million? Is it 10 million? Is it 20 million? Is it 30 million? So I think that needs some thought. It's not really a question. I haven't got any questions yet. My questions are, this seems to be a bit, one of the criticisms that you will receive from the commercialisation panel is that the strategy is a little bit blinkered in that it doesn't consider potential other sources of income. And there are a number, I'm told, certainly in October, council is considering a number of different areas, creation of a shared service arrangement with neighbouring authorities and building control, solar panel installation, development of Nampanton Reservoir as a leisure hazard, a whole bunch of stuff. I don't see that anywhere in here, or indeed anything beyond commercial property. And so I'd like to ask you what your response is to that. So that's a concern for me, and for other members. The second thing is about the split. We, as Councillor Parsons mentioned, and indeed in your preamble, Chief Executive, you said that we're 3 million down, we've got to find this 3 million gap. But I'm not clear yet, on what of that split is from revenue generated from the yielding commercial property and what is from efficiency. I think we need to give a lot more thought to identifying that split and providing some initial figures around what that would be. Those would be my comments. I'd like to hear your response.
You can only pitch the item you're on, you can't start your business.
Through you, Chair, would you like me to respond briefly to those points? So we are very conscious of other commercial activity and take on board the panel's points. In terms of the building control shared service, I don't think that's a commercial opportunity in truth. That's about a shared service with another authority. And you know, that's been done through a long process of consideration. It is now coming to conclusion, and that will fit more, I think, within the transformation and efficiency bracket of work that we're doing. Other opportunities can be developed, but they will take time. The new resource that we're bringing in, I think, will help us to move some of those forwards. It may not be the first and top priority for that new individual, but it will certainly be on the list, and I think it will help us develop techniques and methods by which we can appraise those opportunities relatively quickly and sufficiently in order to say, well, which ones are we going to take forward? So this won't be the only show in town, but it is the first and the biggest show in town, but there will be other things that we need to do across a whole range of subject areas, including employee training and so on, to help us become more commercial as an organisation in due course. Just remind me very briefly of the second point, sorry.
The split.
So I think we heard a bit of the sort of the fag packet maths earlier. So we can, if we're putting X amount in and we expect, you know, 5% back, then we can give a rough figure. It will depend on the council's appetite, really, in terms of how much it does want to invest, and that relates to proportionality and a whole range of things.
But that's what concerns me, because that would be 2.5 million quid worth of efficiency savings. Is that likely? Because that's not what's been said in previous meetings.
So I would like to see us potentially reduce that amount through further investment, but let's see how we go first. Let's see how comfortable everybody is after the first couple of purchases, how well they're performing, and then we can revisit the appetite for further investment or not. But that is part of the issue here. I mean, I think if you look at the other issue, is that transformation and efficiency takes time and takes other investment. So we've got technology we may need to invest in. So the issue for this council is that £3 million is a significant amount of service if we don't meet that through income elsewhere or efficiency that doesn't affect service provision. And I think ultimately, to be brutally honest, £3 million is not going to be achieved without some effect on services in terms of scale and scope at some point over the next 3 years. The trick is to push that as far out as possible and reduce it as possible, to give us enough room to change and develop and adapt to make that the best possible outcome we can, in line with things like the corporate strategy and direction.
But then on a 5% yield, that means we should be borrowing more like 60 million if we want to pay it all off with that, or nothing. So it should be somewhere between 0 and 60 million. That's what I'm trying to get us to think about a bit more.
60 million, and it's, that comes back to the proportionality bit, doesn't it? 60 million sounds like an awfully big number.
Yeah, sure.
I think, sorry, just briefly, I think some of the councils have been down this route and they've got to a point, they've sort of landed on a point where they sort of originally envisaged, and because it would work, they've pushed on and continue to invest in this area. I think in the documents, broadly in terms of net return with the portfolio, and Councillor Parsons is quite right about the initial phase of this and sort of paying back the initial investment. But in broad terms, we could expect, I hope, 3.5% to 4%, and the big limiting factor will be what are the opportunities out there. So 3.5% to 4%, which on a 25 million sort of portfolio, which I think and hope is we could realistically develop over the next 3 years, would give us somewhere in the region of £1 million. So, but obviously the gap's three and that's one, so there's another two.
Okay.
So, but you know, I think if this goes well, then that's great. You know, opportunities may be the limiting factor here, I suspect.
One final point, which I think is obviously we're still waiting as well to hear what the settlements will be. So, you know, we're talking 3 million now, it could be different in 3 months. But what I do think is important is that there is a hole that we need to manage, and commercial property is part of the answer, but it is not the complete answer, and it won't be enough on its own to deal with the issues that we have.
Thank you, I think we can leave it there.
Thank you.
Okay, so we move on to item 7C, so we've got the Housing Capital Programme 2020-2021. We've got Peter Oliver, thank you. Peter Oliver and Councillor Harper Dudley.
Thank you, Chair.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for waiting.
It's okay. It's been very interesting, actually, some comments. So we're good for Cabinet on Thursday. Obviously, our item this evening is to look at, you've asked to look at the Housing Capital Programme. And by way of introduction to that, obviously the report sets out, it's an annual report, it sets out the investment programme for the year ahead, which is shaped to reflect the priorities outlined in the HRA business plan and those identified in consultation with HMAB, which is the Housing Management Advisory Board. I'm really happy to take any questions if needed, or refer to my lead officer.
Yeah.
Great for now, so.
Thank you. Is there anything further you want to add, or should we just go straight to questions?
I have to go straight to questions.
Yeah. Questions? Councillor Bailey.
Thank you. Appreciate your patience this evening.
I was useful there, wasn't I?
Yeah. Just a couple of points, really. Slight observations, perhaps more than a question. When it comes to the environment, do we know what our energy ratings are of our current housing stock to give us a baseline to say that we've improved it and helped towards carbon efficiency? It's the first sort of question. Second one is on the risk ratings, or want of a better phrase, where it says that the main capital contract has failed to deliver the programme, is classified as moderate. I'm quite unsure as to why it would be moderate, because surely, again, with my commercial hat on, and perhaps excuse my naivety, if a contractor fails to deliver, then there should be some financial penalty, surely. Then, so why would it be moderate? It should be surely less rating than a 6, in my mind, if you're passing all that. If you told them that they've got to deliver it by a certain timescale and they don't deliver, then we should be recompensed accordingly. So I'm quite surprised that that's a 6. So, two-part question. I'll try to be brief.
Okay.
Regarding the carbon efficiency target,
okay. So yes, we do have a baseline.
Yeah.
We do undertake EPCs at void stage. We are involved in the carbon reduction project as well. And so we're going to be looking at ways in which we might be seeking to reduce carbon in the future.
So we'll be able to tell as well where we're starting, and hopefully by doing X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
Absolutely. And is that the same for the ones we purchase as well? So the new housing stock coming through, carry an EPC out soon?
We would undertake an EPC as part of that process.
Okay.
And in respect of the second one, we do have financial penalties, but it tends to be financial penalties for, it's measured on satisfaction. And so low scores can satisfaction can lead to a penalty. Time in property, so how long the contractor takes to do the works. So there's a 2% payment retention mechanism built into the contract. But to this date, the contractor hasn't claimed any of that retention. It's unlikely they would get it in any event. Secondly, there's also liquidated damages that can be applied through the contract, and we have applied liquidated damages. We applied for $19,000 in January. None of that related to them not doing the work in the first place. I guess ultimately the threat to a contractor, if they don't complete the work, is that we put the work somewhere else.
Yeah.
So where there have been some underperforming work streams, we have brought in additional contractors with a view to moving that work over to those contractors, and the existing contractor is well aware of that as well.
I'm just surprised with all that sort of mechanism that you have in place that that's still...
Come back to the risk rating.
That still is a 6.
The risk matrix also considers things like reputational damage and that kind of thing as well. So if, for example, someone were to go to the press or something, so I've not had my kitchen done, I was expecting it to be done, then it's terrible, look at the state of it. So that's also built into that risk rating as well. So one bit of publicity could tip the balance in that part.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah.
Did you have a question? Yeah, Councillor Parsons.
It's really just answer. Two years ago, we predicted that the 2021 HRA capital spend was going to be £5.288 million, and we're now predicting we're going to be able to spend £7.339. So at one level, that's a good news story. I just want to establish in the big picture, is that because of continued underspend that we are able to spend that much, or is it new money that's been available? So I'm looking at my bits and pieces from 2 years ago, and we had a declining HRA capital spend of 7.25, 6.613, 5.288.
was a 2 year ago prediction of our 3 year line. We're now able to spend 7.339 million. Is that underspend, or have we found money, or is it what's the balance in terms of where we are on that?
Well, I think what's one of the big things is the increase in acquisitions. Probably wasn't factored into that calculation just there. So there is some capacity within, well, there was at the time some capacity within the HRA business plan to undertake that type of work. And so that's probably the main reason I would say that you're seeing a bigger number at the beginning of the year.
Any other questions?
No. Good news.
I'm not sure if Councillor Bolton had a question. She snipped out.
She's gone.
I'll ask her one quick
one. Yeah, you can do an interim question.
Again, the houses that we're purchasing, so the new ones that we're taking on effectively, do we have a programme of going in and gutting them and bringing them to our standard, or do we just go in and say, actually, no, they'll be fine? What do we factor in? Do we just change the kitchen and change the boiler to make it more efficient, or just as a matter of course, or
gets brought to the Charlotte standard?
Yeah.
So there's an inspection done, and then we would decide how much work it would require in order to get it up to the standard at which we'd let it. That would then be factored into the offer price, and then that would then probably goes into our normal void process.
Thank you.
Councillor Bolton, did you have a question?
I did, but Peter answered it.
That's fine. Is there any more questions?
No.
Are we happy to recommend this then, based on the report that we've received?
Great.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to move swiftly on. So we've got item 8, Scrutiny Commission pre-decision scrutiny cabinet response. We haven't got any this evening. Item 9 is progress with panel work.
That's a really, really cherished. It's just a brief. You took the words right. It's a brief update on progress with panel work. So there are two particular summaries given on the parking enforcement and enhancement panel, and the digitisation and transformation of services panel. I think Councillor Baines is going to give us a verbal update on the car parking situation, and if you have any questions about the digitisation, I've struggled with that word, digitisation.
That's a difficult one.
Councillor Parsons is the chair of the Corporate Services Scrutiny Committee that was looking at that recently.
Just on the parking one, just before you start, Councillor Baines, I had a catch-up with Councillor Morgan between last meeting and this meeting, just with discussion on kind of panels and how we can make them work potentially better. And one of the suggestions that we've got is that where there's a potential panel, that we invite either the head of service or the lead officer that's in relation to that suggested panel to this meeting for us to go through sort of relevant questions up front. So suggestion that we invite Alan Twelves here for our next meeting, for us to be able to go through some stuff on the parking panel.
Well, that would solve the problem of me connecting to them.
Yeah.
Which I haven't managed to do yet.
No, that's fine. So I just think that we should agree that as a process going forward, that whenever there's a suggestion of a new panel, that we invite the relevant person here to the following meeting.
In order to scope it in the first place.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Can I?
Yep, sure.
That worries me slightly because, I mean, if you look at, we're restricted to 4 panels a year, we're going to be lucky if we get 4 panels in our first year, right? Which isn't really that brilliant a performance. We've discussed the parking issue, enforcement and what have you, panel, a number of times at these meetings, right? It's down to the members, with the help of Democratic Services, to get the scoping document done. If every time we're going to suggest something, we're going to drag a senior officer here, right, to tell us what we can and we cannot do, members are quite capable of dealing with that outside of this meeting. I mean, it's like 8 o'clock now, we've had to rush business, a very important business, and we've still got some more reports to go through. Right, so I don't think that's good practice, dragging officers here scoping document should be done in advance with the members who raise it, and I'm sure Democratic Services would help. I really don't think you should be dragging officers here for every time there's a suggestion to have a panel chair.
What's other people's opinion on that?
If I may, I think I can see your point of view, but I think, like with this parking one, the scoping document was drawn up and then there was a bit of a question as to actually what was being looked at is actually doable.
The scoping document wasn't started, it was delegated to somebody who was going to chair the panel. They met with the officer and was told the real world, and then Councillor Baines is supposed to have two chances to meet with the officer, and it's not happened, right? So if people are serious about setting up panels, then they have to do that bit of work themselves to start things off, because officers don't know what the issues are to fill the scoping document, right? So you need that information to start with. So you're going to drag an officer here, you're going to have a report produced, they're going to tell exactly, it's the person who's proposed the panel that should be working with the officer and get the document sorted. Perhaps, because, you know, you've still got that issue afterwards.
I think potentially the issue with the parking panel comes partly down to the fact that we selected a chair that wasn't part of this group. Because obviously we'd had a number of discussions about parking and what the issues were, and that's potentially not been...
No, and I thought Councillor Baines was going to chair that panel.
He was never going to chair it, because he was chairing the other one already, he was never down to chair it.
Perhaps through you, Chair, then, perhaps with your assistance and Democratic Services assistance, perhaps something needs to go out to members highlighting exactly what the process is and what needs to be done before.
Well, I think going forward we've agreed that the panels can only be chaired by members of Scrutiny Commission or chairs or vice chairs of the other committees. That's the responsibility, and that's what's in the constitution, isn't it? I believe.
I'm sure that we would
have had a conversation with Karen about that. So obviously we'd made this decision prior to knowing that bit of detail and said that going forward that we would go back to that. So I mean, potentially that takes that slip away. It does feel like this is kind of like, I think there's been a lack of communication. I think that's made it worse.
But perhaps some sort of, I don't know, reminder, some sort of communication out to members of just, this is the process and this is what's expected.
Yeah.
So that means one of us has to take on this parking enforcement panel.
Yeah.
Or the chair or vice chair of the
scrutiny subcommittee.
Which one would it?
Housing, planning, regeneration, regulatory services chair.
They need a better name for that.
Councillor Grimley.
Well, that would make sense actually.
But Councillor Baines would need to talk to the chair about what the issues are, and then like corporate services, it could be a report at the meeting about the scoping document, and then it comes and it starts.
Well, I kind of now know what I'm supposed to do, so I'll do it.
Are you happy to?
I'll have the conversation with Alan.
Yeah.
With the officer concerned. And then if someone can let me know who's chair, is it Dan Grimley?
I think it's Councillor Grimley.
If somebody can formally let me know who that is, then I can then...
Yeah, can you send that?
Yeah,
I think it's Councillor Grimley, but it's best to double check.
I'm just checking.
But what do we do if he says no? I don't know.
Well, we've referred it to him, so they have to deal with it.
I see.
Technically, it is part...
We are the main committee.
It is part of the role, and he isn't at the moment down to do any of the panels. So it is a commitment of the chairs and vice chairs.
It is. I've just checked. It is Councillor.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Okay, we can pick that up with him.
That's a way forward.
I think we know what to do now.
The waste management one. There's quite a bit of research that's gone on in the background, and we've been to the recycling centre in the last week or 10 days. But I feel like it needs to be made a formal panel now. quite a lot of subs have been done informally, but I think to gain pace, I feel like it needs to be a formal panel. So I want that agreement this evening, really. We've got the scope within, we're allowed four at any one time for officer support, and I feel like to make that one really work now, there's quite a lot involved in it, and I feel it needs to be done properly.
Okay. Agreed. Yes.
Do you have enough people?
Yeah, there's enough on there. It just needs more officer support now.
Okay. So we're allowed up to four a year.
No, up to four at any one time.
Or at any one time.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, we can add that. Yeah.
Sorry, Chair. The other issue you probably need to think about is identifying another chair for the funding for small businesses panel.
Yes. So we had got Councillor Mia down for that one.
Again, is that his? Is that that sub-scrutiny committee?
Yeah, it's the right.
So maybe again, same process that we refer it back, and they have the scoping document on the agenda. Whoever raised it needs to talk to the chair.
Well, the issue we've got there is that I raised it, but I can't chair it because I have a small business.
Yeah,
Councillor Mia is the chair of the relevant committee, and Councillor Brooks is the vice chair. Councillor Brooks runs a small business, so he can't chair it.
Yeah.
Councillor Mia is the other person, but he said that he can't chair it.
No, he was sent the scoping document to fill in, which took him by surprise, right? And he didn't know what the issues were, right? So if it's sent to the whole of the committee on their agenda as a report, like it went to corporate services, right, then the committee, if they know what the issues are from yourself.
Yeah, I've already sent him all of the info.
Well, they should be able to complete, not as an individual as the chair, but as a committee.
Do that?
Yes. And then we've been consistent then, aren't we?
Mm.
Yeah.
Do we know the reasons why it was said that he couldn't chair it?
No, it wasn't he couldn't chair it. He got sent the scoping document as an individual and was asked to complete it. And he didn't know what the issues were at that time.
Oh, okay, right, okay. Because he did have all of the information sent to him following the scoping document, and then no further communication.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a shame, really, that we've got till now, and then it's just come up now that he wants it sending to the committee.
Well, no, that's not quite right, but we've found a way forward, so...
Right, okay, let's do it that way.
And then it's not just him doing it, it's the committee doing it.
Okay, I think that's everything then on panels, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, scrutiny work programme. Has there been any of the subcommittees since our last?
Yes.
So there'll be an update from those, won't there?
Yeah, in the report there is. Oh, hang on, I think that since the agenda's gone out, they've met, so the... When the agenda went out, they hadn't met, if that makes sense.
Is there any separate feedback or...?
Not yet.
Okay. One thing I just picked up on is just updating the document a little bit. So, I'm just going back a section, I'm sorry, just under the progress of the panel work, page 78. So where we've got things like further details needed from the member who raised the topic, that's already been done, so that needs to come up. Has anyone got any comments on the scrutiny work programme? Not scrutiny commission, the committee's work programme.
So can I just ask a question, please? The funding for small businesses, I apologise if I drifted off for a second, but the funding for small businesses is under the HPRRS
group.
But we were just talking about it being headed by Councillor Mia.
It should be neighbourhood.
It should be the neighbourhood one.
So right.
Can we reword it as well? It's meant to be grant funding.
Grant or support?
It's grant.
That limits it really, doesn't it?
But that's the area that we want to look into, just specifically grant support. So what other councils are doing as far as grant funding for small businesses?
Mm-hmm.
sorry, you're sending that to Housing Planning Regeneration Regulation?
No, it will need to go, it's the neighbourhood's work, neighbourhood community wellbeing.
Development sits under planning.
Grants.
And business.
Grants is under neighbourhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know.
Grants is definitely under neighbourhood.
Community grants, but not economic development and business liaison sits
planning
under
and
planning
regeneration.
And regeneration, not neighbourhoods and communities.
Yeah, I think Adrian's right.
Then why is Councillor Mir heading?
Well, because it was grants, therefore we thought it was going to neighbourhoods.
Sorry, Chair, that's community grants. This will be business grants.
That's the advice we got right at the beginning.
Oh, right.
So I think it would be better, Chair, if the Commission agrees for it to be referred to Councillor Grimley's committee.
Yeah, that's fine. That means that they've got two panels at the same time then.
Or two scoping documents.
Yeah.
But it's not a formal panel though, is it?
No, I mean, to be fair, it isn't a great deal of work. No. It's a small research document, essentially.
Well, Corporate Scrutiny Committee had to. We had the Budget Scrutiny Committee and Commercial.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay, should we move on to our work programme?
Yeah.
So, bear with me. So, item 11, Scrutiny Commission Work Programme. Which is that one? Starting on page 93. So, we've got certain items that were due for this meeting that have been pushed forward.
I think the key thing to note, Chair, is you potentially have a very busy next meeting.
Yeah, we said that about this meeting.
Every meeting.
I think that's going to be this again.
This meeting that actually two items got delayed.
Yeah.
So we'd have been here at midnight, wouldn't we?
I know.
Just for information, Chair, as we sit here tonight, there is no guarantee that the insurance item will be ready to come forward, so
well,
that may
it's
or
not
may
the end
not
of the world,
appear.
I think, based on
what we've got.
Yeah, that's fine, but it's useful to know. Okay.
That's great.
And is there anything on the key decisions list that we want to... Oh, that was the other thing as well. On the key decisions list.
Yeah.
I think there's just things that we can take off now because we've got stuff in there that's like February dates.
Yeah.
Can we just go back in and clean that up?
Yeah.
Yeah. So at the moment, there's nothing I can see on the key decisions list that's saying. Ah, it's because there isn't an April meeting, is there? There's the next meeting's a May meeting for.
I think there is an April meeting, but there's just
nothing
there's nothing new on the agenda.
Okay, well,
so
we'll just wait and see if anything
moment,
comes through between now and then. Okay. I think that's everything.
Don't we have. Sorry.
Yeah, no, go on.
We had an extra background paper.
Yeah, that was part of the commercialisation.
So the
background paper was the. Basically the job description.
So we're not discussing it separately is my question.
No, it was part of that commercialisation topic.
Okay,
it was one of the recommendations.
I didn't want us to.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.